Things Unsaid, Episode 7, Family Friends.
Probably saw her voice memo on.
Oh, God, no!
I can't have been that obvious, guys.
Yes, you really can.
You recorded a cop,
Pete. He's a detective.
Big difference, but that answers how he could sense you recording.
He's not Sherlock Holmes. Is he helping, at least?
He's really young. It's his first real case that he's in charge of.
Yike!
Exactly.
So that's why you recorded him? To get more evidence of incompetence or something?
And the first case he's leading is different than the first case ever. He's probably got experience.
In making the right friends, if nothing else.
Do you think any of us could do his job better? Or that recording will help?
Oh, shut up. I just want to be sure everything is being done for finding my mom.
Sorry, P. I know this is really hard for you.
And I bet Detective Wilson is grateful to have people helping him, yeah?
Every little bit helps.
And if he's leading for the first time, he probably needs it. What could be happening that's more important than a missing woman in a small city?
Drugs or something, probably. Plus, it sounds like the police there are short-staffed.
Oh, definitely. When we were going over everything in the lab, it was pretty quiet for a weekday. He's practically on his own over there, just drowning in paperwork.
Was he impressed?
With what?
Your vast knowledge of pre-law.
Ha ha ha.
Or the careful examination you've been doing on your own. I doubt anyone would think to look at old diaries.
Or try to record him. I hope he was impressed by that.
He seemed more amused than anything.
OMG, was he flirting?
What?
You said he's around our age, so maybe...
So he's gonna see if there are any clues he can find from making out with her?
Ew.
I just mean, maybe he got distraught.
By what? My phone recording? My bra strap showing?
Distracted my ass! He was probably feeling threatened or some fragile masculinity thing.
I don't know, he didn't really seem the machismo type.
What is his type?
What?
What's he into?
Crime, mostly.
Classic.
His sexuality actually never came up in conversations about my mom.
Well, if you don't go for him once this is all solved, it's a crime in my book.
Eli!
Do you know much about him besides how young he is?
No, not really. I haven't really cared.
Oh, girl, what's his first name?
You're not doing this.
Of course we are! What's his name?
I think it's Ben or something.
Ugh, classic white boy. Let's see what Facebook has.
No, stop. What the...
Woo, girl, he's cute.
You found him already?
Mutual friends, P. The internet is a powerful thing.
And Detective Ben Wilson might be, too. A damn private account.
Oh, bummer.
And I wanted to see more of him for your family. To help get your mom back.
But after that...
He's all yours, Eli.
Tell me if he's gay and I'll get started.
I think he's mainly a pain in the ass.
Oh, that's perfect.
Week 8.
It's finally cooling down in earnest for fall. Today was the first morning I had to scrape ice off the windshield of the car in order to get to school. The joy of the frost is pretty quickly overtaken once you remember the process of turning the engine on so it warms up while you lean over the cold metal to scrape at the glass just out of reach. Mom said since I was getting to drive the car more than her now, I would have to at least park it outside so the garage door wouldn't wake her on the day she's not scheduled at the library. It's not my fault, but the car is technically hers. Not even technically. My birthday money can barely stretch to cover filling the tank with gas. That means bundling up and trudging out in the early morning. Not that I can't appreciate a good cozy sweater, but I'll definitely miss the Montana sun. I say that every year, and it's still just as hard to describe. At least I'm consistent. It's still the big sky state, but the sky just seems so much bigger when it's warm and there's not a cloud for miles around. Once it gets cold, even the days you see the sun don't help, because you're so bundled up and hunkered down against the wind and freezing air. Something about the angle of the sun from April to October just opens up the world. The sky also feels smaller when you're stuck in a classroom balancing chem equations while the leaves change just outside the window. The whole world is preparing to hibernate, but school is gearing up in full swing, with all our teachers telling us this is our last moments of taking it easy before the real world. If there's some world out there that expects even more work of me than my three AP classes, I don't want anything to do with it. I'll take my chances with Mars. Maybe it's senior year nostalgia, or possibly some kind of escapist fantasy, but I suddenly realized on Friday how much I missed our leaf wars of elementary school. All the trees outside and around the schoolyard fences would drop piles of their leaves into the soccer fields, and we would grab huge fistfuls to toss leaf projectiles. Eventually, there were full-out battles with maps drawn out to mark forts and lists of espionage missions. I think that's where my interest in the CIA all started. I remember the teachers hated it because we would be so distracted before and after lunch, but they couldn't tell us to stop playing together. And no one ever got hurt because the leaves would obviously fall like confetti. Elise and Sarah Marie laughed when I mentioned how cool it would be to reprise this tournament. I conceded that I'm not expecting us to draw up plans or make spy costumes. Just take some time to be irreverent and mess around like we used to. But they're honestly the type of girls who always try to be adults, so I'm hardly hurt by it. That didn't stop some of the boys in the neighborhood, on the other hand. I taught them the basics at lunch, and they started a huge game that same afternoon in the Greenbelt back home. Maggie even joined in. She brought an immense determination. I didn't know so many tactics could be jammed into a game consisting entirely of throwing handfuls of leaves at each other. But there were many continuations of the game over the weekend. Mom kept insisting one of us was going to end up hurt, even more so than she did when we were inventing the game as kids. I thought it was dramatic for her to be upset every time some of us met up, but she wasn't fully wrong. While the game itself wasn't at fault, all future wars were called off quite suddenly Tuesday evening. I wasn't even there for this battle, because I had to rush all the edits and arrangements for the follow-up piece on the increased security in the chemistry supply room. Maggie missed all of school on Wednesday and showed up halfway through AP Lit on Thursday with a huge cast on her leg that went all the way up over her knee, broke it in two places after slipping when Tommy and Josh and Ethan Piero and Nick Bracker were playing ball down the street. Everyone is so excited I couldn't understand some of the details being signed to me, but I know it rained pretty bad earlier that day, so her lawn was really slippery. Thank God Ethan had his car so the boys could take her to the ER. The others felt really bad, but she should be healed before the marching band season starts again. And she somehow convinced Ethan, the other drum major, to try out for baseball, I guess. Oh, that reminds me. Maggie is talking to us again. Starting that same Thursday, she gradually started joining us at lunch again. With Ethan Piero, who apparently she's dating now. She said that's why she was hesitant to sit with us, in case there was a whole big blow-up of drama with her parents. They don't want her to date if it'll interrupt her work at school or the hardware store. Since Ethan was the one who drove her to the hospital, he won over her parents when they actually met him at the ER. He seems sweet, and he must be very persuasive. If he could convince them that she was responsible enough to date after breaking her femur in his yard. I feel like I should be offended at how easily I get grouped into my friends' assumptions that I could start drama. I can't overhear anything. I can't talk to people outside my tiny group of friends. I don't even have siblings, but Maggie didn't tell me or Elise about any of this. Even when I have all the makings of a perfect confidant built in, one of my best friends felt like she couldn't talk to me. I pulled her aside and told her one-on-one that she needed to explain why she was so cagey at that last football game. She seemed a little confused for a second, but once I jogged her memory, she looked pretty guilty. I can't tell if it's a good thing she knew how her actions would hurt me. Well, actually, I know it wasn't cool of her to do that, but she explained that she just didn't interpret the parts of conversations where Ethan and her relationship came up. But when she would suddenly stop letting me in, I thought it was something like selective hearing towards me, like she was ignoring me and my needs just so that I couldn't really participate in the conversation. Mom is still really upset with her, especially since it affected our carpool and everything. Mom thinks she should talk to Dawn, Maggie's mom, about it. I begged her not to, but I won't be able to tell if she makes a phone call anyway, so it's kind of a moot point. I don't want my mom getting involved in my business anymore. It's like I'm a child who needs her playdate scheduled. Plus, Maggie felt really bad on that night after the game, and she'd realized she'd gotten herself too deep in the secrets. I know an explanation isn't an excuse for her behavior, but she's made immediate changes this week. Breaking her leg must have knocked something into place in her head. But it was nice to have Maggie back in the group. She's super grounded and down to earth, but not quite as defiant or troublemaking as some of us girls. She told me I should really consider Gallaudet for college, and maybe find a different place for grad school. It's the same thing everyone else has told me, but it somehow seems to make sense when it comes from her. I had Ms. Ponce read over my essays, and she gave me a sizable amount of edits to complete by next week. Next week is already Thanksgiving. I need to have my whole portfolio of art and essays and journalism excerpts in the mail in 3 weeks. I feel like I was getting my instructions on how to apply to places yesterday. I genuinely only decided to send my painting and photography somewhere last week. Thank goodness our teachers are getting a little easier on us until November. Which reminds me, I need to get back to editing and write my report for Mr. Jones's thing about the implications of the Whig Party and its developments. There goes my Saturday. Sitting in the library trying to avoid being afraid of being wrong, as Mr. Jones always likes to taunt me with. To add insult to injury, his essay is due the same day as homecoming. I know I can't hear the music or anything, but I'd like to stay up dancing and wear a pretty dress, not exhausted from being hunched over documents about the Reconstruction era. Jones said on Monday that he thinks homecoming is pointless and a bad idea. At the next movie night, I privately proposed that we should study hard and be extra prepared for Friday and have the most fun at our senior homecoming. A demonstration is just what we need, no matter how admittedly feeble it is. We've decided to go as a big group, even Maggie and Ethan. And it's great, because Tommy and I are spending more time getting to know each other. When we're not deliberating the cause and effects of Constitutional Amendments 6 through 15, we use the time to plan our opposition towards the essay exam. Eventually. Tommy and I never hung out too much before last year, so his sign is pretty shaky. I have to repeat myself a lot when we're not passing notes. But since Mark introduced us properly this summer during marching band, it seems like he's made a real effort to communicate and understand me. It's sweet to see. He tried to get his notes for class figured out through signing with me, so he's either really understanding the subject matter by translating, or he'll fail and it will be fully my fault. Corey remained fairly silent, because she didn't need to translate a lecture that day. She kept watching me, though, and I felt distinctly judged. I cornered her about all those looks at lunch, but she just laughed. I get we were all being dramatic about the essay, but I don't see anything funny about the situation. Unless someone said something about me out loud in class. I don't think it was Maggie or Tommy. Oh God, I only just realized that. It's too late to ask Corey today. Hopefully I remember tomorrow. Better get going.
End week 8. And all that's left for this is some Polaroids of Mom and her friends. It's so 80s. Jeez. Relatable, but nothing too telling regarding where Mom could be now. Except this got me thinking. Maybe Mom's friends know something. They may not be quite so close as they were in high school, at least if my experience is anything to go on. But I know she still gets Christmas cards from, Elise and, Margaret. I guess that was Maggie. So I found Mom's old address book. That's something I'll mention to Wilson tomorrow, because she almost always had that in her purse. Sarah Marie is listed as living in the neighborhood across the county road from us, so I'm going to visit her in person. But right now, I'm going to call Elise. Should I record the call? Do I tell her I'm recording it? I just delete it if it's not useful anyway. Hold off on that for now.
Dawn, has she come home? Have you heard anything?
Sorry, this is Paige Gilbert, her daughter.
Oh, hello. Is your mother back?
No,
is she okay?
Sorry. I was actually calling to see if you knew anything.
No, dear. Your mother and I had been pretty out of touch since I left the book club. Mm. I was actually surprised when your father called our house to see if Abigail was staying with us. At this point, she wouldn't really have a reason to.
Oh, gotcha. So there's nothing you noticed when you last saw her? She didn't email or anything?
No, I only saw her in person last at the grocery store. We talked about you and my girl, Claire, mostly.
Mostly? What else?
Paige, I know you're worried, but if I had any pertinent information, I'd have told the police already. It's their job to find her, not yours.
Sorry.
It's okay. How have you been? You looked great when I saw you at the station, by the way.
Aw, thanks, Mrs. Baum.
I remember you were looking into jobs back east for the summer. Mm-hmm. Anything come through, or are you staying home for a while?
I'm staying home. Dad got me some work with departments at the Forest Rangers.
Oh, maybe you've seen Jen, my wife. She works on the Parks and Recreation Department.
Oh, yeah. I think I work in her department. I've only been there a little while.
Of course. Jen and I were so happy when your parents moved back. DC was nice, but they were never really city people. Well, I should let you get back to your day, but let me know if you ever need meals to be brought over.
Thank you. Actually, I was wondering, while you're on the line, could I ask you some questions about my parents? I know they met at college.
Yeah, right near the end of junior year of undergrad for your mom. They didn't start dating until December of our senior year, though. I kept telling her to ask him out. A boy that comes from having a deaf parent and shares interests with her, it's worth a shot. So finally, they got together. But Don had some drama with an ex from his undergrad days that caused problems that spring. Ugh. But Abigail was focused on getting into grad school, so she trusted him to deal with his stupid whatever on his own. Anyway, she got into American for grad school, as I'm sure you know. Mm-hmm. Your father finished his master's there and got a bottom-rung job, some program attached to the EPA, I think? Anyway, the rest is really history, from what I can tell.
You talked with her a lot back then.
Mostly this was when we'd talk to each other over the holidays when she came back home.
Well, thank you, Mrs. Thanks, Elise.
You're welcome. Is that all?
What about them moving back to Montana? I thought Mom had actually been pretty eager to get out.
As a kid, yes. But as we all got older, the world wasn't quite the same as we'd thought. It was actually really sudden. We were all a bit surprised. Suddenly, she and Don called to say, Mr. Hebertson, your grandfather, had offered Don his job when he retired. And they were packing up to move back. Weren't even going to have a house. They lived with her parents for 6 months until they could find something.
Huh. I'll ask Dad about that. Thanks again. I'll call if we hear any news.
Thank you. Take care, Paige.
Bye. That's weird. Mom is not the type to just move at the drop of a hat. She had so much promise as a journalist and had a job she always talked about. She was so proud to get a salaried job right out of grad school. I'm going to ask Dad about this when he gets home. This episode of Things Unsaid was written by Julia Wallach. The part of Paige Gilbert is played by Julia Wallach. The part of Shannon Lee is played by Annika Braganza. The part of Elijah is played by RJ Christian. The part of Elise Baum is played by Emily McNally. Music, editing, and sound design by Daniel Farrell. Want to show your support for our show? Follow us on Twitter at UnsaidCast and Instagram at PageByPageGilbert for updates and bonus content. If you would like to advertise on our program, feel free to message any of our social media pages. Thanks for listening.